So, I mean, the Chinese diaspora is huge, and as we just heard, it, you know, spans the globe. And with all of that traveling, a lot of times records get lost, stories get lost. And sometimes you have to piece together your history with whatever you can find. So that's why my presentation is Chinese American Sources for Genealogy Research. But it was originally titled Non-Traditional Sources. And the way I got started, I've always been interested in doing genealogy research, and I would ask my family things from time to time, and I would jot it down on loose pieces of paper. But then things really kind of came to a head when the New York Historical Society found out that I had a family coaching book, which is a kind of a rare object which immigrants use to get past the immigration interrogations when they came through during the years of Chinese exclusion in the United States. Most people studied those books, they memorized it, and then they threw the book over the side of the ship because you didn't want to be found with one. I guess my relatives were not so smart. They kept theirs on them. And then it became, my family story became part of this exhibit at the New York Historical Society. It later went to Oregon, and now it's part of the permanent exhibit at the Chinese Historical Society of America in San Francisco. There's also this on the bottom here, ChineseAmerican.nyhistory.org. That website is still live. It was created for the original exhibit. And it has a wealth of information on there, so I always include it. It has an overview of Chinese American history. It has stories that other people have contributed about their families. And it has an educational guide in there and videos. So it's really worth looking at and, you know, finding your way through. So they turned our family story into a comic book. You'll see the original photo on the right and then the comic book version on the left. I have a copy of it in the back on the table in English and in Chinese. And I have one here which I'll pass around if people just want to take a look at it while I yammer away. It was a 12-panel comic, and these are all the panels of it. This was the original exhibit. Now, personal collections, that's where a lot of my stuff came from at first, and that's always the best place to start with what you know and what you have. I think Tony said that yesterday, and you'll see that Tony and I have a little bit of overlap in our talks, but it's always bears repeating. These are clues to guide you to other resources. First thing I talk about all the time is family photos. So they're really pretty to look at. Everybody has them, hopefully, unless you've lost them in tragic ways or just, you know, through neglect. It's important to look at the photos, ask who, what, why, where. Look at the clothing, look at what their expressions are, and think about what the occasion is that caused this photograph to come into existence. We tend to take photographs of everything today. We photograph our food. You know, we photograph what we're wearing. But back then, you know, photography was actually very expensive. So if you were going to take a photograph, it was a special occasion, and it had a real purpose to it. So bear that in mind when you look at a picture. You know that, you know, tired saying, a picture is 1,000 words, right? Well, it's true. This is a photograph of my parents. They were separated for 9 years because of the exclusion laws economics. That photograph on the left is a family photo of my parents. What I didn't realize until many years later, until I found the one on the bottom right that was done with early Photoshop, is that they actually were not in a photo studio together. They pasted the photos together because they were separated, and this was a way to be together. And you find this a lot in a lot of Chinese-American family photo albums. So because families, you know, through migration and immigration, they were in far-flung parts of the globe, they weren't always together in the same place. Rochelle talked about how her father didn't see his brother for many years, and the family was never reunited until they were all adults for one photograph. Well, Chinese-American families would remedy that with early Photoshop, and they would cut photographs and paste together and create a family portrait this way. My dad was also a romantic. He put a very romantic Tang Dynasty poem on the back of that photo. Never knew that he was such a romantic. Think about who took the photograph. The photograph here of my family on the left is a beautiful color portrait taken by my father. The one on the right was taken by my brother. My brother, just like Gene Chin, did not meet his father until he was 10 years old. And when my brother came to America, it was like a really exciting thing. He'd been living in Hong Kong with my mother and with my older sister. And after, like, I think he was a toddler when my father left, the next time he sees my father, he's like 11 years old, 10 or 11 years old. And even though he was really excited, I'm going to America. And then he lands in America, and he ends up in the back of a laundry. So you can imagine as like a 10 or 11-year-old boy thinking like, wow, this is America? You know, and so his photograph is actually, you know, it's of the interior shot of the laundry. And these are pretty rare, too, because most photographs you see are the one on your left. You know, the photographs you send to your family in China saying, wow, we're doing really well. Look how well we're doing. And then the one on the right is like, you know, look how hard we work. The little kid pushing the box is me. I thought I was helping. This photograph was sent to my grandfather here in America. And I thought it was really cute. You know how you put kids in oversized clothing? You think, oh, that's really cute. Well, my brother died in 2014, and right before he died, we looked through photographs, and he told me things that I didn't realize, I didn't know. This is a photograph of him in a coat and a hat that my grandfather sent to him in Hong Kong. And I look at this, and I say, well, it's many sizes too big for him. And if any of you who have ever been to Hong Kong know that it's kind of tropical. And so the story that I made up in my head that from this photograph is that, you know, my grandfather never got to meet my brother. He never got to meet his grandson because he was here working, sending money back, and, you know, never reunited with the family. And my grandfather died here before my brother arrived in New York. But the story that I made up in my mind is like, this is a promise from my grandfather that, you know, I'm going to get you here. Here's a gift to my grandson, and when you get to New York, maybe it'll be a few years from now, and you'll fit this coat, and you're going to need it because it's cold here in New York. So, you know, when you look at photographs and when you look at documents, again, it's not just about dates. It's not just about time or places. It's also about the story that this creates about your family. Family letters. And notes. This is a kind of amazing photograph. This is actually from an exhibit by an artist in Vancouver. His name is Paul Wong. The name of the exhibit is Suk Fong, How Are You? And it's a collection of letters written to his mother, about 700 of them, from 1946 to 2016. Some are really mundane. They talk about, you know, family details, but there's some valuable information in it, like addresses to your ancestral home and village. Some of them are really beautiful because they're about regular life. The note on the right is a note from my father. When I was young, I said, where do we come from? And he wrote down the name of the province, the town, the village, and even the street. So we lived in the fourth lane in the village. When I was growing up, I would talk to my parents, and then I would jot down notes. So the note on the left was a phone conversation I had with my mother in 1988. On the bottom right is a junior high school homework assignment where you had to do your family tree. And I don't know, I kept these. And these all became very valuable pieces of paper because, like, on the bottom right one is the only place I had a name, an English name for my maternal grandfather. Now, we talked a little about cemetery headstones. Cemetery headstones are also a great source of information for the village, for the Chinese name and the English name of your ancestors. Get somebody experienced to look at these because so you'll see on either side of that headstone is the name of the village. That's my grandmother's headstone. Now here is my grandfather's headstone. He died in 1952 in New York City. And I went every year to the cemetery, and, you know, we light incense at Qingming and stuff. And it was many years later as an adult that I realized that the English name did not match the Chinese name. And Patrick will talk more about naming conventions later. But I realized that in English it was his given name, but in Chinese it's what we call his generational name. And so that's really important, because when you're looking for your ancestors, they could be listed under many different names for different reasons. Chinese obituaries. A lot of funeral homes will put a Chinese obituary in the local Chinese paper. And this is a Chinese obituary for my mother. And what's interesting about it is, unlike most English obituaries, this gives like a whole listing of family and descendants. You know, sometimes American obituaries leave out certain people, but here on the left it lists everybody, my mother's children, their spouses, the grandchildren. And look, here's Clifford Pearson, my brother-in-law right here, on the obituary. So this is a great source of information. You might find these sometimes in the guest register. The funeral home will paste it in there for you, for the family. Okay. Assorted immigration paperwork. These are in our family files. You know, some of them may seem mundane, like the one on the left is just a receipt for money, but that was money that my grandfather sent to my father in Hong Kong, $1,000 to fund his trip to the United States. And then this one on the right is an immunization document, and it has this great photo on it. How many of you have your photograph on your immunization documents now? this is a wedding announcement, invitations, so it shows like who is marrying who. So again, a lot of genealogical information there. Treat all these documents with a grain of salt, though, because sometimes, like especially for immigrant families, some of these documents, they may be paper documents, fake documents, and some of them were fabricated just to ease immigration. So, for example, this wedding invitation is for my parents, but it's dated after my brother was born. I know what you're thinking. It's not true. I think they created this to prove that they were married, so when my father could sponsor his wife and family over, he had documentation. There's also a photograph of them in Western style wedding attire. And they were all done in Hong Kong. My mother's refugee identification card, it lists all these addresses where she had lived. They moved around a lot as refugees in Hong Kong. This is the coaching book. It has over 100 questions in there that immigrants were likely to be asked when you came through immigration in the United States, and handwritten answers. It's almost like, you know, Cliff Notes. And in it was this beautiful map of the village. And that really helped when we went to see the village for the first time. The village is still laid out that way. This is a membership card to actually a New York organization. It's the Chinese Hand Laundry Association. And this is the only document I have that has my father's generational name rather than his given name or school name. There it is. Public records. So, you know, to corroborate the facts, or if you don't really have a lot of personal records. This is a sample list of some archival resources. And, you know, the PowerPoints are going to be on the Dropbox, so you don't want to be taking notes now. You could just enjoy my yammering. Chinese Exclusion Act case files. Angela Tudica will talk a little bit more about these later this afternoon. But very briefly, during the years of the Chinese Exclusion Act, which is roughly 1882 to 1943, these dossiers were kept on virtually every Chinese that came across the U.S. border and was documented. You won't have this if your ancestor smuggled across the border and never went through the process of being legal. But it's a wealth of information. And, you know, somebody asked me yesterday, well, you know, mine is a paper family, so this isn't even about my relative. But you know what? These files will have information in it and photographs that are your relative. And the other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, people didn't sell papers to strangers. You had to be sure that that person was going to be reliable. And because if they got caught, I mean, it could affect you and your immigration status as well. So it had to be someone trustworthy. Very often, it could be another family member, or it could be someone from the village or from a neighboring village. So there's some relationship there, and even if it's a paper relative. And at the very least, if it's somebody who's just from the village, who's only distantly related, there might be a map in there of the village. So it's worth looking at, even if it's a paper relative. The National Archives, there's two books on the information table in the back for reference. They put out these two guides on finding these records, and Angela, again, will talk more about it later. The one on the right, I know you can download a digital version of it. The one on the left is particularly about San Francisco, and I think there are hard copies that you can order. The USCIS has a genealogy division. If you really can't find a file on your relative, your ancestor, they have a search service, and you can search their index. It costs $65, but usually they can come up with stuff that maybe you haven't been able to locate. I was looking for something for my uncle, who died in World War II in the U.S. Army, and I found that his file was in Seattle, because the Exclusion Act case files usually are in the first port of entry. And Seattle NARA, National Archives, said, no, we don't have it. So I paid the money. I had the USCIS search through their indexes. They have some indexes that only they have. So it's worth doing an index search if you have exhausted your other means. And when they came back, they sent me a letter, said, oh, Uncle Peng Yi's record is at the Seattle National Archives. So I went back to Seattle National Archives. I said, well, they say it's here. And then the next thing I know, I found it. They found it. So military records, the military is very good at keeping records. But as Tony said, there was a fire, so that a large chunk of the records were destroyed. But even if they were, what they do is they really try to find whatever they can. They didn't find something for one of my relatives, but they found, like, some payroll records. So they didn't have the actual file. But my uncle, like I said, died in World War II, and I got his death record, his service record. And the death record was incredibly detailed. Over there on the far left was the contents of his locker when he died. It's like lists, a pencil, a dictionary, and then it also lists how he died. Ship manifests. So some of you I know have done searches on Ancestry or Family Search. Ship manifests are a wealth of information. And like I taught a couple of people here last time and this time, when you find the ship manifest, it's really exciting. You see your relative's name, and you see where they came and when they came and what name the ship and everything. But a lot of people I've talked to didn't realize that when you pull it up online, there's a second page. Usually what you see is, the first page you see is this one on the left. Well, the clue that there is a second page is, if you look across the top, it says, list or manifest of alien passengers for the United States of America. So I had one man who had a whole stack of them. He was so excited. He came to one of our conferences. And he said, look, I have all these ship manifests. And I said, where's the page two? And he said, page two? So he went back. He found all the page twos. And the page twos have a lot of information on them. Was it Susan or... Mary, yeah. That we found the name of a relative on the page, too, a possible relative, paper relative. Federal and state census records. I think some of us in the U.S., we're raised to think, like, oh, our families always flew below the radar because they were suspicious of authority and stuff. And actually, just a little bit of editorial, it's like, that's why, you know, the census questions are really important, and the kind of questions that you put on there is really important, because you want people to be counted. So actually, there are Chinese on census records. And It may be hard to find because I think the census takers probably were not familiar with Chinese names. This one is for my grandfather, and I think it's 1905. And his name is misspelled. Now, I put down this website, stevemorse.org, on the bottom. Steve Morse has all these widgets to help find census records. If you don't find it by name, it is possible to find it, like, with an address. But census records, and New York Public Library can correct me if I'm wrong, they're by enumeration district. And so, who knows their enumeration district here? Yeah, exactly. Oh, you would. But Steve Morse has all these widgets where if you have the address, you can, you know, come up with the enumeration district. And be aware that there's a federal census, but a lot of states also have state census. And so if the federal census is 1900, a state census might have been done in 1905. So those are worth looking into. Property records. This is a photograph of my grandfather's laundry on Lexington Avenue in 1940. In New York City, they photograph virtually every storefront in New York City. And you could probably find a photo of the storefront. This arrow points to a sign that extends perpendicular to the building, and the sign actually says laundry. So that was my grandfather's laundry on the ground floor of this building. And you can search for it. In 1980, I think, the New York City also did another round of photographs. And you can see those online, and they're low res. But you can order a high res copy if you find the one you want. I think it used to be like $15. I don't know what it is now. Digital collections. The New York Public Library has an amazing digital collection. A lot of large libraries do. The San Francisco Public Library does. And you can search it by different keywords. You know, also street maps and insurance maps for different places. This is the photo collection from the photo collection of the New York Public Library. And, you know, I just search different things. Sometimes it's address. Sometimes I just go, like, Chinese. And, you know, late at night, if you have a couple of hours, you can't sleep. They're really fun to go through. These are stereographic photos. This is one that was of Chinese railroad workers. So we talked a little bit about that yesterday. Some of the other collections, this is one of my favorite collections at the New York Public Library, is restaurant menus. During a presentation I did in San Francisco for Henry a few years ago, I showed this one, Oriental Restaurant, Man Fang Lo, 3 Pell Street. It's from 1904. And I threw this up on the slide just as an example, and someone in the audience said, "That's my family's restaurant." And they had never seen it before. And what's great about this particular menu is, like, there's a photograph from, I guess, 1904 of the interior of the restaurant. So now she has a picture of the interior of her family's restaurant. Newspaper archives, Tony talked a little about. Here's an example of some. Some are, you know, state, or some are national. And, you know, if your ancestor was a famous person, you know, you could probably find a lot in the newspaper archives. My girlfriend's grandfather is Huey Kinn, and he was, like, a famous pastor. And so this article on the left is from 1887. And it's about a party that Huey Kinn was at. But, you know, your relative, your ancestor doesn't have to be famous. The one on the right is an article about robbers that killed a Chinese man in a holdup at a laundry in Manhattan. And in this article, it lists the man's name and, you know, so... Unique local and community sources. In recent years, there have been a lot of interest, and people have created a lot of different websites that pertain to Chinese Americans. For example, Maine History Online. Maine History Online. There's a man in Maine. His name is Gary Libby. He's done a lot of research and really helped us recover a lot of Chinese American history there. But these are Chinese in Maine. This is a photograph of a woman in Maine who was actually named Mother of the Year in 1950. This is of Delta Chinese in New Orleans. So there are all these different websites that are specific to Chinese American history. Okay, here's some more. Some of these are university libraries. And then this one on the right is kind of interesting because it's an Asian American studies collection. Overseas Chinese community directories. Some of you may have seen like the Green Book. Is that that movie? Well, this is a Chinese version of a Green Book. So different Chinese, overseas Chinese communities printed a lot of these directories so they could find each other. This one is at the Museum of Chinese America. So this is like part of their holdings. And they cover not just Chinese in America, but here's another one they have. This is Chinese in North America. And so it includes Canada, and I think this one includes Cuba also. And see, inside the directory, there's photographs. I think my Chinese laundry directory, this blue one, is making the rounds. This is from my personal collection. It's from 1967, and I think I've found at least two laundries that belong to families of people who are attending today. And it's not just laundries that are in there. This is a directory. It has restaurants. It has embassies. It also has some sportswear manufacturing. And even though it's a New York publication, it also covers and includes Virginia, Maryland suburbs, Boston, and a couple of other areas. And there's advertisement in there. So it's kind of interesting. This one is from 1878. I was at the Wells Fargo Museum in Portland, and they had this on display. But and I have a digital copy, and I'll put it in the Dropbox if any of you are interested. But it covers Stockton, San Jose, Virginia City, Nevada, Portland, Marysville, and Sacramento, and San Francisco. Wells Fargo, I mean, a lot of their businesses were Chinese businesses, and they needed, you know, a directory to them. Wells Fargo did a lot of the banking for them back then. Family associations. A lot of people think that they're impenetrable. But, you know, go make a nuisance of yourself. Or just go and sit. Some of us chins here have made a nuisance of ourselves. And actually this year we had our own Juk Sing table at the Chin Family Association dinner. some of us have become members. But they have records there, and they have people there that, you know, could be have a lot of information. I went into the family association one day, and the secretary didn't have time to talk to me. And he said, oh, go talk to that guy. He speaks English. And even though I speak Toisan, he said, oh, no, speak to that guy. He speaks English. And I started talking to this guy named Ted Chin, and as we were talking, he says, well, I grew up in Connecticut. I said, oh, my grandfather had a laundry in Connecticut. And he said, where? I said, oh, Main Street, Elm Street. He says, well, you know the saying, they intersect. He says, my father probably bought that laundry from your grandfather. You know? I mean, it's kind of amazing, right? You just start talking. eBay and estate auctions. I'm not going to talk too long about this, but it's amazing what ends up on eBay. I mean, this is a Chinese family's photo collection. This is a press photo for a woman who graduated Harvard and Radcliffe, I think, in the 1920s. Restaurant menus and postcards. This is a list of Chinese in Philadelphia compiled by missionaries. I actually bought this and donated this to the Chinese Museum of Chinese in America. But I have some books on the back table from my personal library for reference. But some of these books, even if it's not specifically about your relative, sometimes you might find your relative in there if it's in a particular area. Arcadia puts out these photo postcard books. I have an example in the back. Now, I'm going to go quickly through this, my grandfather the jailbird. So talk about obscure collections. In my grandfather's Chinese Exclusion Act case file, I found a lot of records, interrogation transcripts and stuff. Then I came across this record, which is a court record from 1903, and it was puzzling because the earliest record I have from my grandfather was from 1911. But I said, well, is this really my grandfather? It doesn't say Bok Ying Chin. It only says Bok Ying. But I could see that little square had a photograph in it, but it was either been reproduced to non-existence. And I said, well, if I can find the court record for the judge, maybe I can, you know, figure out if that picture was him, if I can get the original document. I actually went to the New York Public Library, and for this particular judge, they said they only had records dating from 1905. So that was a dead end. I went to local newspaper clippings, and I found something in the Ticonderoga Sentinel around the same date, about 7 days later from the alleged arrest. And it says 37 Chinamen gave themselves up to the U.S. authorities at Rouse's Point, which is what the court document said, on July 22nd, and committed to the jail at Plattsburgh in Port Henry, which is the jail that was on that court record. I went through census records, and even though there was a census record of who was in the jail, it's the wrong date. But what's interesting is, yeah, the census recorded that these men were arrested in Rouse's Point, New York, and charged with being unlawfully within the U.S., and at this time, these cases hadn't been decided and cannot give their residence. But this was a list of the Chinese in the jail at the time they did this census. I was on vacation in upstate New York, and I came across this museum. It's called the Port Henry Historical Society. And that's the train station on the bottom left, which is the Rouse's Point train station where these men were arrested. And I found these jail records. There are two ledgers there if they're not part of an official archive. There are about 800 mugshots of Chinese men in these ledgers. And they, like my grandfather, had crossed the border without proper documentation. And there's my grandfather's entry and his mugshot. And that's my grandfather's certificate of identity. I know that that's him. And there's the two photos together side by side. And that now is the earliest photograph we have of grandfather. He looks a little disheveled. But it's also the only photograph we have of him in Chinese attire. And you see his hairline goes far back. So he had a braid. He had a Chinese braid. Since then, I've helped other people find their ancestors in this book. So that's me with my grandfather through the ages. And here are some of the other people who have jailbird ancestors. You might find two of them in this room. And we're proud of it. And like I said yesterday, now this jail ledger is part of an exhibit at the North Country Underground Railroad Museum in Ossable Chasm, New York. So, you know, I've been successful in getting it incorporated in, you know, a regular museum. And actually a high school classmate of mine texted me recently and said, are you the Amy Chin in this exhibit at this tiny museum? But again, I want to impress on everybody in this room, do your genealogy. It's for you. It's for your family. But get it out there. Don't let Chinese history in America disappear or anywhere. Don't let our history disappear. Just like, you know, the Chinese railroad workers and their history, you know, we've only recently reclaimed. And that's just a picture of me with my husband going, all right, here's some more documents. Anyway, I've run out of time. Thank you all. And I have a little video of an interview that I did for the museum, and I could show it at lunch if anyone's interested. But great. Thanks.